What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 92 of Value Town. I'm Chan Manby.
Like, it took me a second.
I know, it took me a second to remember, but 92. Wow, 92. I'm Chan Manby, and of course, joining me today is Noxious, of course, my partner in crime. What's going on, Noxious? Yes.
Not much, man. Just pretty excited after the announcement of the Heroic Brawl. I want to see what everybody else here thinks about it. Yeah, I am excited about it because it does show some level of, I guess, innovation or development on Blizzard's side.
Yeah, definitely going to talk a lot about that. So, Firebat, welcome. Just after a stream.
Hi.
Welcome everybody else that's here from the stream, too. And VLPS, some big news today. Freshly picked up by Tempo Storm. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, man. Pleasure to be back.
Awesome. All right, guys. Today, so we're gonna be talking about Heroic Brawl, of course, like Noxious was talking about. Some arena stats came out, or at least an infographic that had a bunch of arena stats for the first time ever. So I figured we should talk a little bit about that. Events, of course, with the Last Call, as well as the Kingwind tournament you casted, Noxious.
Yes.
Our Week in Hearthstone. That's decks that we're playing, or maybe some popular decks that are going on right now in the community. And then lastly, Mechatorx is back. We're going to be talking about some new cards that me and Noxious came up with, and maybe one of these guys came up with something. We'll see. And then lastly, viewer Q&A. Go ahead and tweet your questions to @ChamMV, and I will read some of them out. If not, we'll take some Twitch chat questions, of course. Okay, guys. So the big topic, everybody seems to be making a video. You know it's a big topic when everybody makes a video about it. And if you look at Reddit right now, there's probably about 5 or 6 videos talking about the Heroic Brawl that was
I need
announced.
To look at that to get some inspiration. Because honestly, I feel like as soon as the announcement came out, I just made the video right away.
Well, that's the best time
really
to make
it. Any of the I hadn't seen any of the data that came in and people starting doing the math on the wars and everything. I just kind of did it myself, and I'm not sure how accurate it was at the end of the day. But
well, I mean, I think your first gut reaction to it is always the best one. But for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, Blizzard announced a brand new Tavern Brawl that they're going to be coming out with soon, TM. Everybody was thinking it would be this week, so we were all crazy excited about it. But so it's going to be coming out. It's a different type of Tavern Brawl. It is a Tavern Brawl that actually requires a buy-in, so kind of like Arena, where Arena is 100. This one's 1,000 to actually try out. And when you buy into it, it has an arena-like experience where you're trying to get 12 wins, and once you lose 3 times, you're out. And after the 3 losses, you get a reward. And if you get, obviously, a 12-win reward, you get crazy, crazy, like 3 golden legends. And
you get, 12K gold worth of stuff.
Yeah.
That's what it amounted to. It's, somewhere around 11,500-ish when I did the rundown on the total reward cost. So you get, a 1,200% ROI, return on investment, from just getting to 12 wins, but...
Yeah, somebody had a breakdown here. Let me actually bring this breakdown up.
It's absurd. They have the breakdown actually in the rewards that you can see yourself if you click on the link for the rewards.
Oh, actually, let me just do that. That might be
at the very bottom. Just click Heroic Tavern Brawl rewards. Go up.
Oh, there we go.
Click this.
That's clickable.
Yeah, it is. It doesn't seem clickable. They messed up.
Exactly.
But it is.
Okay, there we go. We got the chalkboard here, so you can kind of get a sense for how much gold and dust you get in the legends. The legends are where the big payouts are for the gold value. So getting to 10, that's when the big value comes. But the question is where on this list is actually the cutoff point for 1,000? But anyways, before we get into just all this math discussion and stuff, I think the point of them doing this was to introduce some type of... another thing too, this is standard decks too. So it's not arena where you have a draft or anything like that. You come in with a standard deck and you play to try to get 12 wins. So it's kind of like a pseudo tournament experience. And I think that's what they were trying to introduce here. But okay, so I think the first thing to talk about is the 1,000 buy-in. What do you guys think about just, introducing it like that? Obviously not making it accessible to everybody, because 1,000 gold is quite a bit of gold, especially for people that don't play very often. So it's a big investment just to do it one time. So, thoughts on that? Noxious, you want to start?
So I'll start off by saying that it's not just 1,000 gold. It's 1,000 gold and $10. And that's what we have to remember, because the players, like, you know, let's say Firebath, myself, Amaz, Kalento, Crip, whatever, we've been sitting on piles of gold for a long time. We don't need the gold. We don't know what to do with it. We don't need the packs. We've got all the cards. So the people who are in the scene don't give a crap about the rewards, right? But yet, the rewards that we're given are in the form of card packs and dust and gold, which means for us it has no appeal. However, for someone who may not have gold because they've been spending it on card packs, paying $10 for a chance at the lottery winning, from their perspective, is a pretty good thing, right? So if they think they've got what it takes to get to even, say, 7 to 8 wins, so they're like, yeah, I can totally do this, right? Like, I'm ranked 14. I think I know how to play this specific deck that I net decked. It's good. I understand my deck. I just pay $10, get in there, maybe get a good chance at the big reward. So it's a bit of a roulette. It's like a tax on the gamblers. It's a tax on the gamblers is really how I look at this, because if we have a few thousand gold sitting around, odds are we are the target audience for this, for the competitive rankings, so like at the top end for the bragging rights, let's say. But when it comes to the $10 entry, we're not the target audience, and they're really targeting the people who have a tendency to, you know, put money into like the freemium games, you know, the games where you can sometimes buy your way to an arena run.
They're trying to make money? Pretty... What? Are you serious?
No, but it is a huge entry cost. And the rewards seem big, right? Because 50 packs costs you a huge amount. Like, if you want 11K gold worth of stuff out of real money, that's going to cost you a pretty penny. It's like $140. So some people might look at this as a way to cash in big. But
yeah.
Clever, Blizzard.
Yeah,
clever.
Exactly. VLPS, what do you think, man?
I like it, man. I know it's a steep cost. I know that it's not, you know, necessarily for the average casual player. You know, that person probably will not be interested in this type of thing. But, you know, as Nox just mentioned, it's, you know, those that have the gambling mentality, this will be something that, you know, put in $10 and you can walk away with $100-$150 worth of value in terms of, you know, if you get the 12 wins. So I like it. It's new. It's different. You know, once upon a time, I've been playing this game for a while now. You know, we only had arena and, you know, ranked mode.
Not that long ago, no one complained
back then. And now all of a sudden, like, they start introducing brawls and heroic brawls. And now people are complaining for, like, new content that we, you know, previously never even had. So, I don't know. I'll say this much. You know, I love this community and I love the, you know, the pro player base, just the Reddit community as well. But I will say that, you know, lately it's just been a little bit too oriented for my liking, and I don't want that to you know, discourage Team 5 from, you know, trying out new things like this and bringing in new concepts for different groups of players within the community. So, you know, hopefully they realize that there's, you know, there's a bunch of us that still support, you know, things like this and new competitive modes. So I like it personally.
Okay, great. Firebrand.
Yeah, VLPS is not going like this. I don't think it's new content. This is recycled old content. They took the content of Arena, the Arena system, and then just jammed Constructed into it. And if this is their tournament mode, and because you said it's kind of like a tournament, but it's not at all. You have one deck the entire time. There's no lineups. There's no deck building strategy. It's playing ladder with rewards is really all it is. There's no new content here whatsoever. You take your ladder deck, you play it here, or you play it in Legend Ladder. Either you're striving for HCT points on the Legend Ladder, or you're striving to get some packs here. But either way, you're still just basically grinding ladder. And that's not exciting or new to me. I would really like to see them take a game mode that actually has new content, like actual Tavern Brawl has new content. Heroic Tavern Brawl is literally just Legend Ladder for people.
Yeah, but it is kind of what people have been talking about is, you know, the ladder system for people who grind. Like, for most players who don't, you know, aim to compete at a top level, you know, they keep saying ladder has no rewards for me. So they added chest, right? You remember rank 5 chest, legend chest, or whatever. And the difference is pretty small between those two. So people have been asking Blizzard to give them rewards for playing real decks in standard, and Blizzard is obliging by adding those chests, and then people say, well, that's not enough. It's still not incentive enough for me to give a shit. And they say, well, now you can play standard in the arena system, but we're also raking in a huge chunk of what you put in and kind of siphoning some of the currency out of the virtual economy, which is interesting because I did not anticipate Blizzard would try a one deck. I'm not surprised about the one deck tournament mode, but I'm surprised it's structured like Arena in terms of rewards with you know, this maximum amount of wins, maximum amount of losses, and there's no way to sideboard. Like, there's no deck building component to it besides this one. I lock my deck in, and I'm stuck with it until, you know, win or lose, I get 3 losses.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to hop in the boat with VLPS on this one.
Just so
we have, like, an, you know, more of an even argument here. So I agree with a lot of things that you're saying, you know, Firebat. Like, it's not really that innovative or new. From the standpoint of what we've seen, and, you know, just borrowing ideas from Arena or whatnot, and it feels just like playing ladder for incentives. But at the same time, you know, if you take a step back and you think of it more in terms of, you know, Tavern Brawl is kind of like their sandbox. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have a PTR. You know, there's no test server or anything like that. And I think they've been trying all kinds of different types of formats, and even some cards, you know, maybe some card designs even come from some of those formats. And I kind of take it like that. And, you know, this is just their, like, the first step into something that, you know, we hoped eventually becomes more of like a tournament mode type of thing.
Sure.
It's a single deck type of, you know, format. And, you know, you have to buy into it. I mean, outside of Arena, there's been nothing that we buy into, you know, and we could get a chance to do that. So, you know, it's their test on that. I mean, they're making it, they've already said, they're making it a huge buy-in just because they don't necessarily want it to be accessible to everybody. And that's one of the reasons why the community is complaining too. It's just like all the people that actually just enjoy the casual Tavern Brawls are complaining. But this is only 1 week, guys. This is not like forever or anything like that. You know, like, if they could add another, you know, just like this is an addition to the Tavern Brawl, I think a lot of people would, you know, most of the community probably would be a bit happier with the current situation or them trying this. But the fact that it's replacing the Brawl, that's why there's some pushback just from the large portion of the community, because the large portion of the community is casuals. So from that standpoint, just them testing it out, I'm definitely all for them testing it out. The only issue I have with it, honestly, is just the timing of it. Like, I know the actual value of what you get, you know, for the 1,000, you know, it does add up, you know, given how many wins you get. But I just feel like it would make so much more sense if it was timed when an expansion came out, like around the same time. So all these packs, so if I get like 8 packs, that feels so much better than getting like 8 packs of dust. You know what I mean? Where the cards are dusted for a quarter of the value, right? Just like the normal value. So, I think that would actually be received a little bit better. Not for Firebat, of course, with his problems with it. But
and if this is what becomes tournament mode, if it's not just a test and they're just like, tournament mode, guys, this is it, then I'm going to be extremely pissed. But if this is a test and they're developing tournament mode, I'll be very happy.
Surely
they're not transparent with that at all. We cross our fingers. I hope so. But
it must be,
the reason why there's community lashback is because they don't tell the community the direction they're going with anything. They're just like, this is our product. All right, we're going to go back into the shadows, guys. Peace. And they just leave. Like, if they told us, hey, this is a test, we're using this to help us develop tournament mode, people would be like, wow, we're looking forward to the future. This is going to be great. This is awesome. Mm-hmm. Run your tests. I support you fully. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons for the community lashback, is that they just don't say anything about this. And I personally feel like it's going to be a long time before we get to tournament mode.
Oh,
and
for sure. Yeah, me too.
Based on this, it feels like forever away. And, you know, this is what I alluded to a while back, where I just wish Blizzard would be more transparent with what they're developing. Like, I don't need them to tell me we're developing, you know, a shaman card that prevents spells from killing your totems. Like, I'm not interested in that. But I'd rather just know what it is they're working on in more clear ways than here's a Tavern Brawl. You know, like, you remember the Tavern Brawl where they had, you know, you get to pick a buff for Death Rattles, Battle Cries,
Murlocs,
or whatever.
That was actually cool.
But, I mean, it was great, but here's the thing. We don't know what the fuck they were testing. Like, we still have no idea if that was a long-term... We assume it had something to do with testing. I mean, they did mention they tested stuff in Tavern Brawl, but, like, this tournament mode, for instance, like, if they're not going to add, like, an actual client that's beyond just locking in one deck, it's going to be a little bit of a bummer. I mean, just a reward structure, too, really. Like, Firebat, 85% win rate. Does that sound realistic to you?
Okay, so let's talk about the math. So what's the math of breaking even on this thing?
5 wins is where you get 40 gold above your investment, assuming you value gold and dust equally, which if you want packs, you probably do. If you're even remotely interested in packs, then you value dust equal to gold, I assume. And that's basically 1 for 1. So you get 240. At 5 wins, you get 440 total in terms of dust and gold, and then 6 packs. So you get 600 gold in packs and 440
this
of miscellaneous.
This is the math lesson right here.
But it's true. You get about 1,000-ish rewards at 5 wins. So you break even and a little bit of a bonus at 62.5% win rate. If you were to maintain a 62.5% win rate on ladder, you'd be going to BlizzCon this year. I'm exaggerating a bit.
You need a high roll towards the end. You usually need to be around like 68%.
But the point is, 62.5 is the baseline break-even point. So just compute how much gold is disappearing, right? So the distribution of it is basically everybody gets fucked, aside from a minority.
You should probably be playing against top level pros, mm-hmm. right?
And so all the way through.
Well, right? I think what will happen is like the very first day, you know, you'll still have some elements of, you know, like arena like experience where like maybe the first, you know, first few couple wins are not necessarily against, well, you know, just the top legend players or anything like that. But as each day goes on, like your first match is probably going to be against somebody good as the week goes on, because less and less people will be playing it. Except for the top players that have gold.
If we look at win rates of like the top players in tournaments, like top level tournament players against other top level tournament players, the best tournament players in the entire world usually have about 62-63% win rate.
But that's against other tournament players.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Real tournements.
Yeah, so they're
and
their
that's
winning
in
percentage
best
will be
five. Best of fives is a little bit different than best of ones. The better player does not win as consistently in best of ones instead of best of fives. So all of those players against players of equal caliber will all have even lower win rate. So if there's high level tournament players playing in it, and that's a majority of what you face, which probably isn't going to be true. It's probably still just going to be high level ladder players, though.
Yeah.
Then it's going to be very difficult to turn a profit at all.
I think you underestimate the amount of feeding that's going to be happening there, because one of the big appeals of cash sinks in games in general, no matter which game you look at where you can buy like in-game access to a tournament, like Magic the Gathering, right? You go into a sealed or draft in Magic the Gathering, like most people participating in it are just, they're not even experienced enough to make the right call. So there's a good chance that even though we're assuming that there's going to be a high roll entry, you know, 1,000 gold is a big barrier, $10 is going to be a big chunk of the players will actually be spending real money.
There's a difference between that and what we're talking here, because a lot of those type of cash sinks, you know, and in the mobile market, right? I've actually had a lot of experience in the mobile market. Like when you're buying into those type of things and it's like a lottery feel to it, you have a reasonable chance of winning. Where here, it is skill based. Like we can make all our jokes about RNG, but it is still skill based here. And if you're not a great player, you're not going to do well. Like in this thing,
I'm not saying they're going to do well. I'm telling you, there's going to be a lot of feeding at the bottom.
What about rank
10?
What about rank 10? There's no way. I mean,
there's no rank 10s, but a rank 5 with any standard meta deck could high roll this. They can have their 55% win rate and just
stay
there.
Maybe. The OPS, thoughts on just like, yeah. I guess, any,
I mean,
any
like, what's the, so, I mean, I think it's fine, like, breaking even around 5 or 6. I mean, if they made it, what, like, 3, like, going 50-50, like, you make your money back. I don't know, like,
yeah, that would.
I feel like
good.
There has to be some type of, you know, there has to be a performance level that, you know, getting, like, a 55% win rate is where you would break even, you know what I mean? They're not going to make it, you know. 3-3 gives you gold or gives you a profit. So where would the break even point be in that case?
Well, it would have to be at least 4. Like, it would have to be 4 wins if you want to make it 55%. Because if you're looking at like arena, honestly, you could go 2 wins once and 3 wins the second time, and you'd usually get as much as you expended. So if you have like a slightly below 50% win rate in arena, at least you get 150 gold back on average at the end of the day. You don't get more than that. But you'll break even a lot earlier. In this case, it's a lot more competitive because the rewards are distributed to the top more so than the bottom, which is good for competitive play. Yeah. But it also means that, you know, a 62.5% win rate is still a huge
leap. It's good. It's definitely
leap.
Good. Yeah, it's just
really
not
good. It's a huge leap from, I mean, if we're assuming a meta game where everybody's net decking, like top tier decks, that just seems really difficult
to
manage.
Good. Yeah, Firebat, you're going to say something?
I mean, I really don't care about the resource or like the reward system. Like
most people do
the cards.
Most people do.
I think it's pretty cool to get 12 wins and have it be super epic. So making it super hard makes it challenging, mm-hmm. which makes it exciting. And when you don't care about the rewards and you just care about the prestige of the rank, because making it so difficult does make the rank pretty prestigious, mm-hmm. which I think is entertaining awesome. And fun.
It's awesome. But, yeah,
that, so you, that is you awesome. Prefer to just get some title but, instead of like actual rewards, like in packs yeah. and stuff.
Like okay. like a badass, you got 12 wins in this game mode card back sort of thing.
Yeah, or something like yeah. that. Okay.
Something that, like oh that is God. What I would enjoy. But I think the average player is going to find these like this game mode very daunting. And
it's not for the average. That, that's the thing.
I mean, like, they I'm talking about like an average legend player is not going to be able to get 12 wins with any sort of consistency. It's going to be like below 1% that they get to 12 wins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was the intent. I mean, they've come out and even said it, right? That was the okay. intention of it. It's just really just to try this out and make this kind of a, you know, a big, you know, big buyout, maybe cool streaming experience, you know, that sort of thing, right?
It will be a cool streaming experience, and I'll enjoy it for that. So I think the game mode's yeah. fine. I just think it could have been better.
Yeah. I mean, again, I told you, Chanman, a while back when we were talking about this, I'm like, if I play this, it's not for the rewards. Like, there's literally zero incentive for the people who are already in the scene to care about the rewards. It's going to have to be, like, as Fireball mentioned, the prestige of winning the entire thing. But when I look at it as a game mode that is meant to appeal, even competitive players, like, the entry fee almost doesn't matter. For them, all it does is keep people out, and at the same time also give them like feed wins to start off the run, because you'll have people just losing their first three matches, like in Arena. You have the like the bottom feeders, really, that's exactly what happens, shoving wins into the system for the more experienced players to climb up. Yeah, that's really what it boils down to.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I would have liked to have seen it like maybe half the cost, like 500 or something like that. Sure. Especially if they wanted to get more stats too. You know, I think it would have been cooler for them to make it a tiny bit more accessible than how much they're going to get here. I hope they come out with the stats, but they probably won't. But to how many people actually
we made
actually
$5 million.
Well, not like that. I mean, just like how many people actually played, you know, and how many games were there, you know. Then you can multiply it times 1,000, and you can see how much gold. But it would be interesting to see how much data they get from this, because again, I still think it's a lead in. I think they'll probably do one of these again like later. They'll probably go to the extreme. They'll probably just do like $100 gold buy-in or a 200 gold buy-in and see what happens there. I wouldn't be surprised if they eventually do that. But
that would be pretty cool. Honestly, 150 gold entry fee for an arena-like system like this, I think would be okay. Like, people who play ladder might actually just play this for the 12 win runs the same way they would play the 1,000 gold one. Like, if you're going for 12 wins anyway and your goal is to get the 85% win rate, the entry fee as a top tier player just almost is irrelevant, because all it does is prevent you from replaying. Right, like sure. The fact that you can't go infinite at 1,000 gold makes it a bit more of a pain because it's longer to grind. That's really just it, though.
Okay.
I got like 6,000 gold saved up, so hopefully I can go infinite for a while.
I think you have a limited amount of runs, they said.
I've got like...
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
You only have five.
No. Five. There's a limited amount of runs you can do that week when it comes out.
It's five, I think, or something like that. Yeah.
It doesn't say.
Yeah. I don't think they mentioned it, but probably going to be like 3 to 5.
Oh, I thought somebody said 5, but okay.
Why?
I don't know why, but
because if you get 12 wins,
take my money,
time,
damn it!
They want to control the gambling, all right? Put a cap on the gambling in Hearthstone.
It's bad.
Yeah. I mean, I have like 10,000 gold or something, but I'm still contemplating whether I want to do it or not. I'll probably at least do it once just to try it out. Yeah. But I'm gonna be playing like you guys in the first freaking three.
Honestly,
first game, Firebat.
Like,
second game, PLPS.
The people this will appeal to, I think, are just the people who like Hearthstone competitively, but just never really get to play the game long enough to achieve like crazy ranks.
Yeah.
I think that's just it. It's like good players that just don't have time, and they'll just go in here, either pay $10 or 1,000 gold, and see whether or not they've actually got the skill that it takes, and they'll just deplete the amount of runs they have the right to.
Yeah.
Say they spend like 5 runs at $10 each. Now that's going to be their expense for the Hearthstone month, and they're going to be pretty happy about it.
Of course. I mean, they have to make money too, guys. I mean, so yes, this is a gold reclamation project, or you know, just a feature too at
a
this
siphon,
point.
Yeah.
And they're going to take out a lot of gold from the economy, and that's fine. That's like that's how they make money, and we want them to make money, so they'll keep supporting the game.
Sure.
All right, well, let's move on. So another thing that Blizzard came out with was the Arena team. It came out with an infographic that had a lot of Arena data on it, which we actually don't get a chance to to see very much arena data just generally from the team. So this was actually pretty cool, you know, getting a chance to look at this. And you can see the American region here. You know, they have like a listing of like wins per run, you know, just an average wins per run. And they have obviously three people listed at the top here, Crypt being the most obvious one. But Battle Pants, for those of you who don't know, is actually Hafu. So Hafu and Crypt being top three. Do you guys know Alum? Either any of you guys?
No, yeah. I know he's Shreking these two.
He's Shreking these two.
Alum,
you need to start streaming like right away if you don't even stream. Yeah. Just like advise him. But yeah, you can see top players by class. Let me actually bring this up. This is like when you blow it up, it's like enormously huge. Let me see.
The players by class have like under 15 runs. All of those are like statistically insignificant.
Yeah, 11 runs.
It's like, what is it, like 10, I guess 10 minimum to show up on there?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're talking 11 runs of those specific classes, so they've probably done a lot more with other classes, right?
Yeah, but they should have said that the minimum run's a little bit higher.
Yeah, it should have been way higher than 10. That's you're right. I didn't actually notice that the first time I looked at it.
It should have been like 13 runs with Freeze. The guy's at 7.5. That's still pretty big.
That is pretty good.
7.6 Freeze runs when you're going infinite.
That is
pretty
good, man.
It's like
Freeze.
I can't see these things. So yeah, some of the other
win rate must be. His name is Archbishop too, which is just making it even better.
Yeah, it's hard to.
You know he likes Freeze.
Yeah, you definitely know he does. But yeah, you can check out all these images here. Let me link you guys in the chat. But there's some cool stuff. It's like, you know, some of the cards have been played a ton. And
I like the drafted over thing. Tiny Fins drafted over Piloted Shredder.
Over Piloted Shredder. Yeah. The guy's like, that makes no sense.
It's like tough to
Somebody was really drunk when they were drafting. That's basically 6, a count of
times.
How many people were drunk enough to draft that evening?
It's this thing right here.
Oh, man.
Okay, linking the right one. Yeah, so anyways, you can take a look at it. Lots of cool data. And
that's insane.
They have it for each of the regions, too. There's a Europe, Asia, and China one. So check that out. Lots, you know, I hope they do more and more of this kind of stuff. And I wouldn't even mind seeing some of this for standard. That'd be kind of cool.
That would be
I know the Chinese server, like NetEase, which is kind of like the Blizzard in China, just due to the regulations there. They do this kind of stuff pretty often, like releasing, you know, info and stats, not only for Arena, but for Standard as well. So, yeah, I'd like to see more of this as well myself for NA and EU.
I'm looking at China server, and the priest is 7.08 per run for 13 runs. So a little bit lower.
One of those
guys
in the top three for China, he had like 800 runs of Arena.
Yeah, he does. Holy cow.
The sample size, I mean, Crypt's sample size is still like a lot bigger than the two other guys. Like Alum is at 184, Battle Pants 125, which is Hafu. Like Crypt has 513 runs, so the sample size is a lot bigger, and so the 7.4 may actually just mean more in that respect. Like if we had Alum go through another like 400, like almost 400 runs, like would the win rate still be 7.6?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Either way, Crypt's consistency is just really good.
Crypt's overall, a machine, dude. I mean, Hafu plays a lot too, right? Maybe just not on that account. I bet you together her total is probably similar to Crypt's, but
sure,
on a different account. But yeah, 513. Wow, that's.
I mean, Crypt's still with the most 12 win runs, right? Like that's the.
Yeah, that's right. That's 12. One of the designations underneath too. Is he has the most. So it's cool. You know, we definitely should be able to see and, you know, give accolades to our arena players too. And this type of thing just allows the community to recognize these folks and understand how good they are.
Would you like to have these stats available in game just to be able to keep track of the leaderboards, right? Instead of having to wait for Blizzard to release an infographic, which is amazing, by the way. I love that they're releasing this, but it would be really cool to just see the leaderboards change on a daily basis when you're in.
Yeah, just real time. Yeah, I agree.
Real time competition.
Leaderboards tab. Yep.
I mean, that sounds complicated. So maybe not.
I mean, it's just like right under Tavern Brawl button. It's a little button. You click it. It says leaderboards. And
that
then
sounds
there's an arena tab.
No.
And a rank tab, and it's just got two leaderboards on it.
Not doable.
You can't
mobile,
have it
man.
In the middle.
Not
it would have to be somewhere on the side. Because on the side, there's room. It's not like a game mode, right?
A little button that pops out on the side then. You know, it's like...
I agree, man. I totally agree.
How difficult is it, really?
Witchery.
Too confusing to new players, right?
This is going. Oh man, we're going down that route. All right, let's kind of transition over to events. We had the last call event, the final last call event this past weekend with NA being the last region, and let's see. Let me bring up the NA webpage here. So lots of cool, some cool storylines. I think the biggest one, at least going into the tournament, was that Frozen had brought that lineup that was basically just anti-Warrior. And dude, that was ballsy. And like, I mean, I had a lot of respect for him to actually take that big of a chance. At least I felt like it was a gamble, you know, just strategically, you know, not even... You know, it was something you make before you even know everybody else's deck, right? So it was totally a strategic gamble, and I would have liked to have seen his priest win, but unfortunately he fell to Silent Storm in the first round. But yeah, overall, what did you guys think of first off Frozen taking that strategy, and then just generally ACT?
I think that strategy is very silly. It needs to have 85% against Control Warrior with all of his decks to have an edge in the series, and his edge would be by 2%. So you'd have a 52% win rate in the series if he had 85% across the board. It's very hard to get 85% against a deck. Even though Control Warrior is one of the decks that's easiest to get an edge against, I don't think that Priest deck is going to have 85% chance, or a lot of his other decks have, you know, upwards of 85 or 90% chance. I just don't think that's the case. Mm-hmm. And then if they bring any sort of changes in their Warrior, and Warrior is one of the most commonly targeted or banned classes, because of the Tier 1 decks, it's one of the only ones that you can target. You can't really target Druid or Shaman that well. Mm-hmm. So a lot of players just throw kind of curveballs in their Control Warrior to help it not get targeted, i.e. bringing C'Thun Warrior or just having an extra bomb in there or something of that nature. And if anyone does that, suddenly you're not 85% against all the decks and you're just unfavored in the series. And you have to pilot these weird-ass decks that you've never played before up until that point. So it takes a ton of practice getting used to weird decks like Priest that up until that point, Frozen hasn't really played too much of at all. So I think it's a pretty silly lineup, and it's more for publicity than for trying to win, which I think Frozen's one of the best players in North America and had a very good chance of winning the tournament until he decided to turn it into a publicity stunt rather than trying to win.
Wow.
So
okay.
It's a little harsh.
Wow.
But Frozen's really good, and I'm kind of disappointed that he
won. Oh, I think Frozen's been one of the best players this year. So that's kind of why exactly. I was rooting for him, too. VLPS, thoughts?
Yeah, I see what Firebat's saying. I think the strategy definitely is a little bit concerning. The 85% benchmark probably could be attainable if all, you know, other seven players brought, you know, a standard Control Warrior list, but as Firebat says, you know, people deviate from that. You know, a lot of the players are smart like him, and they realize, you know, everyone's going to be bringing Control Warrior, so a lot of those guys brought C'Thun Warrior, which kind of counters it, and at the same time, a C'Thun Warrior with Doomcaller and Emperor, you know, as I mentioned to my chat, because I was getting that question a lot leading up to it, like you said, you know, this was a big thing that everyone wanted to see, you know, how would that lineup fare? You know, what do I think about it? And I think that, yeah, I thought a C'Thun Warrior could easily, you know, sneak a win in those four games, and it's exactly what happened. You know, Silent Storm just kind of bullied him around with that C'Thun Warrior with those Emperor, with the Twin Vecklers, and yeah, got the win in. So, yeah, it's a strategy that is really risky, and it didn't pay off this time. So, as for the entire last call as a whole, I'll say that you know, a lot of these guys, you know, BB Gun, mm-hmm. Silent Storm, Neobility, you know, amongst the pro scene, you know, me, Firebat, you know, we've known these guys for a while now, and you know, we know how good of, you know, they're great players, unbelievably good players. But it's good seeing them, you know, come to this tournament, and although only one of them actually is going on to BlizzCon, it's good to see them get, you know, some recognition and you know, kind of get their names out there a little bit in the general Hearthstone scene, because mm-hmm. you know, those are guys that are kind of they've been under the radar for a while now, and it's good to see that they came and they performed pretty well. And one of them is going on to BlizzCon to represent NA.
Yeah, and congratulations to BB Gun Gun for you know, winning the whole thing and going to be going to BlizzCon. And like you said, a lot of these guys, I mean, we've seen them very often, actually, in all the HCT events throughout the years, too. So I think some of these guys at this point are not, you know, just unknowns, even to the general Hearthstone community. Unfortunately, they're just not streamers either, you know, and that sort of
bit.
Yeah. So no surprises that a lot of these guys were here, and it made for a really, really good tournament. It'll be interesting to see just how BlizzCon plays out. I feel like there'll be a lot of players that are, you know, once again, unknown at BlizzCon. Some of them being from the Asian region, which we actually have a very great storyline with Handsome Guy over there. So hopefully you can play that up. But outside of Tice, you know, I don't think there's that big of a name there. So I don't know how you guys think that will affect the BlizzCon viewership and whatnot. Not Noxious?
Probably not much. I mean, at this point, we've been, like, I'd say for the last year or so, a lot of the tournaments that we've seen have been like these tournaments where we have like a lot of high performing players that don't necessarily have a huge streaming presence come in. So I think people are used to it at this point, where, like, I don't know if it has anything to do with the decline in viewership of those tournaments, right? Like, Fire Battle would probably know more about how, like, you'd probably have some input on that, because you do think that the viewership has declined and Blizzard hasn't really helped in that regard. But do you think it has anything to do with the names not being there? Because I don't really see it. Like, I'm still used to this kind of tournament that I don't really care.
The biggest problem with the decline in tournament viewership early on, in my opinion, was just how long the breaks were and how frequent the breaks were. Mm-hmm. And they really cut down on that in a lot of the broadcasts, and the numbers went up when they cut down on that. So
it's not the names, then.
Like, I think the names, I mean, it's all a factor.
Yeah.
But at this point, most of these players have been known. And then also, BlizzCon's just BlizzCon. It has the title. You're going to get pretty much the max viewership possible from the Hearthstone scene just by the nature of it being BlizzCon. Like, if you're a Hearthstone player, you're probably interested in checking out BlizzCon regardless of who's in it. And by the nature of them qualifying to BlizzCon, all of these players have made a name for themselves. They have some amount of name recognition now.
Yeah.
You know, there's a decent following behind a lot of these players. And
I think the casters did a really good job, too, of, like, presenting, for instance, New Ability or Noblord or Nostum. You know, it's like these names people have heard, but they don't necessarily know too much about them and how much they really participate in the whole pro scene. I think the casters knowing about them really helps. Build them a storyline, right? Because they don't have one yet, so it's just a matter of building that one, and that does come down to the casters. And I think they did a pretty good job when it came to the last call, just tournament in general. I think a lot of people just understood how much BB Gun Gun deserved to be at the top there. By the end of it,
he's pretty good, man. His techs in all of his decks were really sick for that tournament. That's where he was mage, like, head and shoulders above everybody else. Is he just had the best lineup for that tournament, and everything was text appropriately. He had a game plan, and it all just worked out super smooth with the lineups of his opponents. Mm-hmm. So that was really sick to see.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll be talking a little bit about it tomorrow, next week too, just given that it's a week before BlizzCon. But we have the lineup set, and that's pretty exciting to see. And I know a lot of them are going to probably be heading over to Anaheim, and we should see a lot of B-roll, you know, footage for these guys too. So we'll get a chance to know them even more during the broadcast, which will be cool. Let's see. Next up on the events, Kinguin. So you casted that Kinguin for charity event, right? And it had had a bunch of different formats, right? So didn't have some formats. I thought that had. It was a gauntlet of stuff, right? Or no? Was it just a
show? No, not at all. It was actually just a... I mean, it was a single elimination tournament, so like best of five. The goal of it was really the charity thing, right?
Yeah.
And funny enough, of all the 16 people invited, the top three were Life Coach, then Tice, then RDU.
The top three was
all G2, then Orange finished in fourth place. So it was actually a pretty interesting event. RDU, of course, getting the shitty end of the stick again. And third place of all his teammates. He's just like, you know what? I can't do anything. This is not working out. But it was still a really cool event. G2 just performed that well, honestly. Yeah. It was pretty cool. Plus, we got well over the goal of the entire fundraiser. So, again.
It was trying to raise, what, 5K? I think you raised over 5K.
Yeah, they were
right?
trying to get 5K, and we started off like 1,000 and some, and then we reached 5.5, cool. And the top four would donate 10% of their winnings. So we ended up at like 6K over the weekend as a fundraiser, which I think is pretty awesome.
No, that is great, man. Yeah. That's definitely awesome. Okay.
G2 has been absolutely killing it this year, last year, ever since they've been around. They're like one of the only teams that has players that actually get together, talk about the game, and practice together. And surprisingly, I guess that works.
And they practice playing together. I guess that works.
Sometimes, right?
No, but it's cool that they win too. You know, I mean, they actually perform at tournaments too. So that's the big thing. Like, we've had teams before that do get together, but they just don't get those big wins. And G2 has just been stringing them for a long time now, which is pretty crazy.
I mean, three guys in the top four of us. I mean, this is absurd. Like, I can't even. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. Definitely insane. Okay, well, moving on. There is one bit of news that I did forget to touch on the news section, which is our guest VLPS being picked up by Tempo Storm. Definitely a big, you know, big news for you. So, thoughts on that, VLPS?
Oh man, I'm super happy, man. Yeah, I've been in talks with them for about a month now, and I've been, you know, a fan of Tempo Storm for a long time now, way longer than that. So it's been good seeing their, you know, it's been good seeing them branch out from Hearthstone to other esports and kind of, you know, have a lot of success in the esports industry. So super happy to join the Hearthstone division and hopefully continue that success as well.
Awesome, man. Yeah, definitely good luck to you. And I think it's going to be, you're going to have a good time. I think getting a chance to work with those guys. It was definitely fun. Okay. Okay. So next segment we're going to do is our week in Hearthstone. So this is where we always talk about our decks and, you know, some of the things that we've been noticing going around in the meta and whatnot. And so we've got a few decks from the guys here and let me go here. Okay, so what deck should we talk about first? Let's bring up VLPS's Warlocks. So Dragon Warlock here. And so this isn't the Reno Warlock, which I think we've seen a little bit more in the most recent times. But talk to me about this a little bit. I saw you playing this on stream just the other night and having a lot of success with it too.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to take it. Like you mentioned the Reno build. That's obviously a way you can take the deck as well. This build obviously runs a little bit more Dragon, so there's more consistency in getting activation on, you know, things like Netherspite, Blackwing Corruptor. It's a very tempo-based deck. So, you know, you always have those cards like Twilight Guardian and Blackwing Corruptor that are really, you know, at those mana costs, just very big tempo swings. And it has efficient, you know, AoE removal in the form of Hellfire. And then it has that closer in the form of Leroy Jenkins combo.
Yeah.
Kind of sweep those wins in against the control decks.
I feel like I have to have that combo in every single, like, non-Zoo Warlock these days. Like, because when I was playing, like, the Reno Warlock, I had to have it in there, too. Obviously not two POs, but is it a necessity from your guys' standpoint in terms of, like, mid-range and control Warlock to have that ending?
I don't think so. No, I played around with a build that ran Jiraxxus and no combo, and it had success as well. It's kind of more so, you know, I know Emperor's rotating out shortly, and I kind of want to do the 30 damage OTKs as long as I can before the combo's gone.
Of course.
But,
also, really good against Shaman. Shaman's, like, kind of difficult to grind out if they go for, like, a really defensive game and never extend into your AoEs. Take you to Value Town and try and grind you out the whole game. And then when you Jiraxxus, they burst you.
Yeah,
that's true.
Spare Claws hits you, like, for 20% of your HP. So it's one of those things where I'm looking at, like, the deck, and I think the metagame slowing down must have helped it a lot, right? Because you're looking at double Hellfire and it just seems really good right now. Aside from Thing from Below, you can probably answer most things that come out of Shaman with this deck.
Yeah,
man, if this deck had Dark Bomb.
If Dark Bomb was around, this would be busted. Holy shit.
Warlock would come out and Control Warlock would be beating down on mid-range Shamans.
Yeah. Yeah.
There would be Druids coming out to beat on the Warlocks and then Warriors to also kind of mix in there. I think it'd be a healthier metagame with just adding Dark Bomb to help Warlock counter Shaman.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Actually, I think so. Like, I'm looking at the deck, and I think it's in a pretty good spot, but it's missing, you know, the extra early game kick where sometimes you end up
Tunnel Trog sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
you do get punished by a one drop. Yeah, it does. More often than I wish it did. Like, I'm still happy the Warlock's coming back. Now the metagame slowed down a bit with Aggro Shaman being, a substantially less present portion. Somebody got the top 20 with Aggro Shaman double Geomancer. Who was that? I forget the name. It was so ridiculous recently. It was just Double Elemental Destruction, Double Kobold Geomancer got the top 20 like this week.
Just that sounds pounding cool. People with Spirit Claws?
Yeah, dude, just play it aggro. It was an aggro shaman. Double
that's
Geo.
Nine, that's like 18 damage, baby.
Control tool early game, even more enablers than Thalnos. Just push phase if you need to. It that turned out to work.
Dude, how aggravating.
You said he was running double LA Destruction?
Yeah, he is.
So he probably just disregarded the board state and then turn push. Three or turn four. Exactly. Hey, we get everything down. Keep going, phase.
Yep. Phase.
Sounds like
you imagine just losing to like Spirit Claws and then a Doomhammer, and that's like 30 health. Or like
Harrison Jones, the Claws, you're happy. Harrison Doomhammer comes out.
Would be brutal.
But yeah, like this deck, I really like the way it's built because there were a lot of attempts at Reno Dragonlock when
some people still do it. Yeah.
Well, after Karazhan, people were trying Reno Dragonlock with another Spite Historian, but I think it's. Like, Reno is just, it's Reno Lock. It's good, but at the same time, it's also suffering from inconsistencies, which is why I kind of like the whole doubling up on dragons now that the metagame slowed down.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Doomsayer in this deck?
I tried it out, and, like, it felt really bad against, like, decks like Druid and Warrior, which were pretty popular in the climb. And even against Shaman, like, if you didn't have it on turn two, it felt like a dead draw towards the mid-game. But, yeah, it's certainly a consideration. At one point I was running double Doomsayer with just two Hellfires. So due to lacking that Doomsayer, I threw in that Shadow Flame to kind of have even more comeback mechanics in the form of AoE. Yeah. But yeah, Doomsayers are definitely part of the build as well. You could also run, there was a point where I wasn't running Netherspite Historian. I was just running Blackwing Technicians just to have the full-on tempo theme, kind of like power creeping at every single mana cost type of thing going on. So. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to go about it.
Do you have a 100% win rate against Control Warrior?
100%?
Netherspite Historian with Bran is pretty busted.
Yeah, there was one before I had like two or three Asaras, and I was BMing them, and I ended up losing because of BM.
Oh,
it was on stream. My stream was just tearing me up. I had like 30 damage in hand, and I kept the game going on, and I eventually died to Grom. So
yeah,
you can lose to Warrior, but there probably is... you BMing and it's your fault more so than
than the deck. The deck would have won. I see.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, those of you that are listening just on audio, it's a dragon, full out dragon warlock. So it's got double coil, double power overwhelming, peddlers, historians, one Bran, of course, an earthen ring, double earthen ring farseer, two imp gang bosses, one defender Argus, two hellfires, a shadow flame, twilight drakes, guardians, drake. Azure Drakes, Blackwing Corruptors, Faceless Minips, Leroy, Bookworm, Emperor, and Alexstrasza. So, definitely try that out, this deck out. I think it's working pretty well. At least it seems to be working really, really well for you. So, definitely good stuff.
Yeah.
See, the next deck, let's talk about Fatigue Warrior. Okay, so this one is... I think I have the wrong one here. Let me bring it up. Hold on, give me a second. Talk about it while I'm bringing it up a little bit.
The OTK Fatigue? Sure. VLPS, you brought the deck with a collateral call, so why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, it's not my deck. It's been a deck that's kind of been running around ever since, I think, the infamous Reddit thread where Tyler got... I think he mentioned, like, there's no way I lose this, and then
that's right. That's
the opposing player dropped this combo on him that no one really... up until that point, I hadn't seen any type of person running that combo drop like a 90 damage fatigue combo on him, and he was just mouth wide open, no words were said, and ever since then it's kind of been refined a little bit. This is, in my opinion, the best version of it, and it's the version that I think Purple was playing on stream at Top 10 Legend a couple days ago. So the whole purpose is kind of run all the efficient removal that Warrior has, and kind of delay the game as much as possible up until you approach the point in the game where neither player has many cards left in their deck, and after the Emperor has discounted your at least two of your combo pieces, which there's four combo pieces in total, Bran, Bronzebeard, both Cold Lights, and one of the Violet Illusionists, you then drop those four cards in succession, and if they have zero cards remaining in their deck, it does something like 35 to 40 damage. I don't know the exact numbers. it's a pretty fun combo. I don't know that if it's better than a standard Control Warrior list, but it seems to perform well. I think I think the fatigue deck out there right now in the game is probably Warrior. You know, whereas in the past it was more so, you know, Rogues or Druids that were kind of trying to fatigue their opponents out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and those of you wondering, you know, how this combo mechanic works. So, Violet Illusionist allows you to not take any damage on your turn. So when you're milling out your opponent and he's taking a ton of fatigue, you're just sitting there pretty, not taking any damage, which is pretty awesome. Firebat or Noxious, you guys played with this deck at all?
I did. It's like 45 damage OTK at the end. The issue is, like, it's the Fool's Bane is really what makes this deck viable. I found, like, I tried to run this deck without Fool's Bane, and it turns out you actually can't. I haven't been able to make it work nearly as much. And I tried the same idea in Rogue. You know, initially I'm like, yeah, let's play Mill Rogue with Violet Illusionist, but it turns out it's even worse. I'm just playing a standard Mill Rogue. Yeah. But Warrior found an alternate win condition. Now, this kind of reminds me of Purple's, you know, Axe Flinger OTK deck with Bouncing Blade a while back, where it's like another way to kill people, but is it really better than the standard way you kill people? And again, like, going back to that question, I don't know if it's particularly tailored around a specific deck. Like, what do you beat with this that you otherwise don't as a Warrior?
100% win rate in the mirror.
In the mirror match.
Warrior just gets destroyed.
You just can't. At least Warrior just keels over and dies.
I think it depends on the Warrior build. I played this match actually this morning, and I was playing the Zoth Warrior, and I ended up winning. So another thing is, once you see the Emperor come down, it raises red flags, and you know exactly what you're against. You want to drop your mana as soon as possible.
How did he lose?
I was at 98 HP with... I just entered Fatigue, and I was at 98 HP.
Yeah, he's going to hit you over 45, like, and 40, then you've got like more turns. Yeah.
You just know they're not running Elise, so you just drop your Monkey as fast as possible and just start bombarding the board with Legendaries and your N'Zoth, and eventually they just run out of removal slash Brawls, and they have to drop the combo a little bit sooner than they want to, and it does 60 damage instead of, you know, the 95 plus that they're going to need it to do.
I guess it makes sense if you get Justicar super early, right? Like, if you get it really early, then I think you're good. That's the only way
Also a pretty important card. But yeah, if it's just a standard control wear, I could definitely see this deck being favored in that case.
Yeah,
I've played this deck on stream a few times. I ended up never losing to Warrior, but I don't know. I love fatigue decks. I tried playing the Violet Illusionist Double Cold Light Brand Emperor Shell in every single class one of my streams.
Nice.
So I played it in everything. And it actually works quite well in Shaman as well. Like, you can...
Surprise, surprise.
Shaman's got, like, really good cards. It can stall the game out for a very long time.
It's got the best removal in the game with that.
Yeah, I played it in Paladin as well.
Paladin works also really good.
It's like auto-winning against Warrior if you have just the card in the deck as well.
Yeah.
You got so much heal in Paladin. So Paladin and Shaman, this shell can also work in to create cool fatigue decks. But I don't even think, if you want to run this as the Warrior version, I don't think you need two Cold Lights. I think you can get away with just one Cold Light, and then you don't even need to run Emperor. Because as long as you have enough removal to, like, last in the mirror, then you can just win that way. Like... Mm. One or two extra cards of fatigue draw is enough if you're able to remove all their stuff.
Right.
So yeah, I did find, like, Cold Light's a pretty dead draw a lot of the times against a lot of aggressive decks. So
that's the problem with this concept in general. You know, whether you're running in Warrior or Paladin or Shaman, you know, if you draw the Violet Illusionist or the Cold Lights or the Brand, you know, on turn 4s, 5s, 6, you have a card that's going to remain dead in your hand for, you know, 20 plus turns. So that's why, at the end of the day, I don't know if this is more efficient or effective than just a standard control wear list due to that fact, but it's a fun concept, and you could definitely succeed with it, you know, especially with a lot of players probably not knowing it's, you know, it exists yet. I mean, now at this point, it's probably pretty well known, but it's a fun deck to ladder with, I would say.
What I think is a really cool concept that for control warriors that kind of exploits the Warrior Mirror that helps you be able to win it right now. The really good tech that this deck uses is just Bran. Bran's super sick in Control Warrior right now because against Shaman, you get Bran plus Ghoul, can clear up a bunch of totems and whatnot right before they play Thunderbluff Valiant. Mm. And then in the Control Warrior Mirror, you can play Bran plus Elise, and then you get an extra card going into Fatigue, which can be super huge.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. Makes sense.
Points.
Yeah. Now that control or combo warrior's gone, this is basically the only combo deck left, right, for Warrior. With Charge being gone and all?
I mean, you could technically try out the Grom shenanigans, but that's not as much a combo deck, I guess.
Yeah, but they have the... Oh, yeah, they don't have much. They have, I mean, just like spamming patrons.
Spamming patrons
combo.
Still, yeah, exactly.
Like a two, three turn combo, I guess you could say. But okay, let's see, next up. So this isn't really that new of a deck, but I've been going to the dark side this week and just going just straight face hunter. And surprisingly, it has success, which is, I mean, it's tough against Shaman, but depending on what you get. But against a lot of the like mid-range decks and not crazy control decks, it actually works well. So I don't know if you've gotten a chance to play any super aggro decks recently.
I've played against this Hunter deck a lot today.
Yeah, dude.
I've been playing Druid, and they would always turn one Druid. Secret Keeper, and then I would answer with like Living Roots or whatever. They'd always play like turn two Cat Trick, and then I'd try to like coin something, or I'd Wild Growth, or I'd Innervate, and there'd be a 4/2 there, and it'd jam me in the face, and I'd have to react to that. And they were running Animal Companions in their version instead of Argent Horse Rider. Then they'd play Animal Companion, roll Huffer, punch me in the face, and I was just at 20 all of a sudden. It was... It's turn three.
Turn three sounds good. Yeah, I think there might be like on average one turn where I actually don't hit face. I just trade with something. The rest of the way, it's just like everything to the face, man.
Trick is so insane.
Yeah, Catrick's so good. Man.
I kept getting shit saying it was the best Hunter secret when it came out, and I'm like, Dart was arguing with me. He was like, "How is this ever good?" I'm like, "You don't understand, Dart. This is really broken."
And I think
it took Camlan
really
Snipe as well. Yeah, but
I think it was less good when it first came out because there were so many Warriors and Zodiacs going around. Now that the meta's kind of shifted towards mid-range Shamans and Druids.
It feels good.
Yeah, Catrix now, like, probably the best Hunter Secret, I would say. Competes with Freezing pretty well for the best spot.
It's up there.
Dart is way better than Explosive or Bear. I mean, not Dart. Snipe is better than Explosive or Bear. Snipe destroys some Druids, man. It's insane.
Well,
Snipe destroys Druids,
and it can catch like a Totem Golem sometime, too. But it really sucks when it kills something extremely small.
Not a lot of decks have anything that small.
Yeah.
Like, what does Shaman have that small? They have, like, Tunnel Trog is the smallest, and then everything else that you hit is good. You usually hit a 3/4 or a 4/4.
Yeah.
Sometimes you hit a 5/5.
It's like one of those things where it's like, I mean, if you compare it to, say, like, Bear Trap, right? I've actually found Bear Trap to be good against Shaman.
Interesting.
It's like, because they usually don't remove it. Like, they don't expect it, for one. Like, Bear Trap is probably one of the last traps they expect these days. And so whenever it comes up, then, well, you get another 3 damage. And they have to remove it, too, right? So it's like a mini 6 damage swing. I mean, not swing, but they have, you know, they're absorbing 3, and then you're doing 3. So it ends up... I don't know. If you have a lot of cards, then obviously Snipe, you know, on a blank board is definitely great. But I've actually had some good experience with Bear Trap too, though. Explosive, I could see maybe replacing it with Explosive, though. That generally is just, you know, like...
Yeah, there's no Zoos anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
What, like, you're not... You're targeting Shaman, that. Basically. I think this deck that we're looking at, like the aggro Secret Hunter, is definitely one of the decks that took a lot of people by surprise, like, in recent weeks. Like, it just kind of came out. A lot of people expected Secret Hunter to gravitate towards the mid-range, and then suddenly, Leeroy and everything aggro came out, and it's just one of those things where the pressure of Hunter already still stays, and the worst part is, now you have to literally play around a billion things. You see a Secret come down, it takes so long to defuse the fucking bomb. Like, you have no idea what it is, and you miss step once, and suddenly you take 10 damage.
Well, Snake Trap's, like, out there, too.
Yeah, and there, like, there's people playing Snipe, Snake, Bear,
everything.
Freezing, Dart, like, it doesn't matter. It could be anything.
Yeah. And it's just, so, like, you have a priority list for what you're afraid of, but if you still slip up a little bit, or you were caught off guard, right? You're going to turn 5, you're going to play a Druidrake on the curve, you're pretty happy about yourself, and then they play a Secret, and you're like, well, shit, they might have held on to this fucker because it's Snipe, and they know I'm going to play into it, or they might not. And so you start doing all sorts of janky shit, and it turns out to be this irrelevant Bear Trap, and you've wasted your entire turn doing nothing, and they play something, and you lose. And it's just really frustrating.
Now turn on your stream. They can see your hand.
And then they can see your hand.
They play the perfect trap for the situation every time.
Oh, no, that's so toxic, dude.
Exactly.
That is so bad.
Oh, that is
pretty triggering.
So I actually have been playing around with... So Fiery Bat's been in the Worgen Infiltrator position too. But but I've had games where I like literally just one short, you know, like, or one or two damage short So I'm like, you know, let's just go with a stealth worgen and see if I can, you know, just get in that damage instead of just like trading or losing like that fiery bat to anything that pings, right? So I don't know. What do you guys think? You think fire bat's still generally better?
What does fire bat think?
That's a good boy, man.
What is the objective of the one drops in your deck? You want to play them on turn one? Or
well, definitely want to play them. Yeah, definitely want to play them.
Why is Argent Squire included?
Turn 3-2. What is that?
If your main goal is to play them on turn one, then you have no way to really activate Argent Squire to make it like more useful than just what it is. And it's probably not going to connect twice. So you may just be better off playing two Fiery Bats, two Worgen Infiltrators, two Secret Keepers sort of thing, just so you have six one-drops. Because six is going to be your statistically optimal while full mulliganing for a one-drop to find a one-drop, to find exactly one one-drop, not one or two.
Right. I see what you're saying. So
you may just want to run six one-drops and just go double Worgen Infiltrator, double Secret Keeper, double Fiery Bat, and then get rid of that Hunter's Mark since you don't have great board control and there's not very many taunts in the meta right now.
Yeah,
there's the 5/5 and that's it. And usually because of the way your deck is built, you can probably handle it. Like, you'll finish it off with Kill Command or an Unleash after a Snipe if you play Snipes in your deck, if you rotate them in. So there's like a lot of ways to...
It's so dirty, man. I feel dirty playing it, dude. I feel totally...
If you,
just
good. If you have a one drop consistently and then you can follow it up with just like a turn two Snipe and they have to develop into your one drop because they don't have any removal, or it's a Worgen Infiltrator and they can't remove it because it's stealth, so then they develop into it, get sniped, lose the game, you get in four free damage.
Yeah, I know. That's freaking amazing.
It gets ridiculous quick.
Yeah. So if you guys are just tired of, you know, just playing a lot of these, I don't know, if you've been playing a ton, you just play a ton of control decks like I do and just kind of get tired of just these crazy long matches or whatnot, just switch over to this and have some fun with it, and you'll see. You'll probably
play around with the secrets too, which is crazy because you can just do whatever you want with it. Exactly. I mean, just keep cat tricks like in freezing traps.
Keep cat trick every time.
Cat trick is a must. Yeah,
it's so OP.
It really is a must. Okay, so let's move on. And Noxious, you have a curator warrior for
control warrior. I won't speak about it too much since I've already presented a while back, but I think right now is a good time.
I remember that. Okay.
Because shamans kind of come back. The metagame did change quite a bit, and I feel like with the amount of shaman in the meta, this list has been just doing very well against them in general. We replace the Acolytes of Pain with Joel Scarab. We play curator at the top with the Corrupted Seer as another way to clear the board, as well as Alexstrasza is the one dragon we run. So it's just an alternate twist on Control Warrior. It's okay. It beats Shaman more consistently, I found, than the typical Control Warrior, just because of the way the deck runs with the double Blood Hose, which tend to be cut nowadays. And you also play the Corrupted Seer, which gives you another AoE. So it's really just an anti-Shaman Warrior build, if anything.
Yeah.
Blood Hose, by the way, is bonkers insane right now. So good against Druid and so good against Shaman. Like, every shaman I've played against today has hexed both of my Bloodhoof Braves.
They had to, right? There's no choice.
they can't
do so
it.
Bad.
Or they're trading like three minions into it, which is like no good.
The card's nuts against shaman, dude.
It is. Yes, it actually is.
So this is a list I brought back just because of that. I mean, that's kind of the idea, really. Like, I was toying around with the idea in typical Control Warrior of moving away from Ravaging Ghoul, because I was thinking, well, okay, maybe I don't want... If I don't run Acolytes, then do I really want Ghouls? And the more I fuck around with alternatives, the more I realize, well, yeah, I'd love to go down to one Ghoul without Acolytes, and it would be okay. But ultimately, I'd need to get another piece of AoE beyond Corrupted Seer to justify that, and it's just too good.
What you need is Bran in this deck, dude.
Bran?
Ah, that's actually pretty good. I like the idea with Elise Starseeker, when you get like
an extra... You got Jeweled Scarab, you got the Curator itself, like...
Dude, the Greed Dream, man. The Greed
I like the
dream.
Idea of Bran, actually. It's actually a pretty good fit for the deck. That's probably something to include.
Totally, man.
Bran's bonkers in here. I think Gore Howl is a little outdated. Everybody and their mother has Harrison Jones or Ooze in their deck.
It sucks, too, man.
Every zoo I've played against has had Ooze. Shamans have had Ooze and Harrison Jones.
I know, it's double now. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's It's insane how much weapon removal is on ladder.
I can't even play Medivh anymore. It freaking sucks, dude. it's like this indirect effect that really screws like half of the decks I like to play.
Dank world problems. I can't play Medivh anymore.
Fucking shaman and hunters and everything. Screwing up my Medivh.
All you've got to do is make Spirit Claws 2 durability and suddenly you can play Medivh again.
Dude, why is Spirit Claws 3 durability?
No one knows, dude.
In all of Hearthstone.
No one knows.
Yes. Yes. That's crazy.
And why did they give it to Shaman?
No one knows.
What is going on?
Is like a recurring theme like every week on the show.
Every Spirit episode Claws. Is like, why Spirit Claws?
Spirit Claws is like literally, we bring it up.
Yeah. I mean, when double Geomancer Shaman get the top 20 legend, you know something's wrong. Like,
you have a hint
that the card is carrying more than its fair share. Right. Anyway,
well, why don't we transition over to actually let's give some shout outs to some folks. So iTunes, for those of you who listen to the Valuetown on audio, whether it's Google or iTunes, I just want to give a shout out to some folks that have left 5-star reviews, which really, really helps us out. It helps people on iTunes find Valuetown by searching for Hearthstone Podcasts. Big shout out to CodeCal420 and Harry Frazier for doing that. And, you know, if you'd like to, too, if you listen to an iTunes, I encourage you also to leave some reviews for us. Also, I'd like to give some plugs to the Patreon. And for those of you may not know that Valuetown is fully supported by you guys in the Patreon. So, you know, if you do enjoy the show, I would encourage you just to take a look at the Patreon page, which is on patreon.com/Valuetown. And help support the show. But I do want to give a shout out to some of our patrons, Devin Westfall, David Thomas, Paul Hatchman, Nicholas La Revere, Eric Lynn, and Lucas Capdeville. And I wanted to integrate some of the, you know, just have the patrons be able to participate a little bit in the show too. So I do want us to take a look at David Thomas has a Kel Death Rattle Wild Priest that I think is worth taking a look at. You guys play Wild these days at all?
A little bit here and there.
Yeah. Gosh, I haven't played in ages, but definitely the last time I played, it was a deck almost exactly like this deck. So,
but you had Deathlords in yours, surely.
I had Deathlords in mine for sure. Yeah, okay. I did.
Not quite,
and I had two Entombs too, and Light Bombs.
Two Light Bombs.
It's pretty hard to get away from this. Yeah. But
the crazy thing about Deathlord in N'Zoth Priest is in the aggressive matchups, Deathlord just wins you the game because it's Deathlord, and it's a 2/8 taunt, which is just absurd against an aggressive deck. But in the control decks, it's going to pull a minion from their deck, and then you're going to bring it back to life, and it's going to pull another minion from their deck. And then you have the ability to take them to fatigue and just win the game by removing all of their minions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is why I'm surprised not to see the Deathlord in the deck, this is a Kel'Thuzad N'Zoth deck, which aims to be playing, I'm guessing, like a more on the, I don't say tempo-ish. It's kind of a tempo, a little bit of a later tempo start.
Barnes with Deathlord.
Dude, Barnes in this Death Rattle deck is insane, actually.
This deck it's insane. If there's a Deathlord, though, you Barnes out a Deathlord and just feel bad about your life.
That's true. That's the one negative.
Barnes, I think, like,
I think Double Light Bomb has to be a must.
Right? Double Light Bomb has.
Well, it depends how tempo you're going. Yeah, the Double Velen's Chosen is definitely a must. That's one of the best cards in Priest.
I think one of the issues with it is if he plays both Loot Hoarders and he plays both, you know, the Boom Bots and then Shredders, Belchers, like, he has too many Death Rattles that won't. No, he could potentially summon, like, his Loot Hoarders and his Boom Bots over his Shredders and his Belchers.
Oh, I'm trying to say that, man.
May want to cut down on the Death Rattles a little bit.
Yeah, so maybe reduce the Doomsayer count and one Loot Herder out, and you find room for like second Chosen and second Light Bomb and maybe another Death.
Can't drop that Doom though. I mean that Doctor Boom though.
So many turn two plays as well. He's got eight turn two plays with the double Museum Curator, double Loot Herder, double Doomsayer, double Shadow Word Pain. Yeah. It's so low curve for a Priest deck. I get that the curve extends really high at the late stages, but I don't think you're going to need two Doomsayers, two Loot Herders, two Museum Creators and two Shadowed Pains. Like, I think you're going to want some of that gone. And the Shadowed Pain is, or the Doomsayers, like, one of those two seems to be the weaker of those slots.
Do you guys like the Cleric package these days? Or Shard Cleric?
In Wild, it's pretty okay. Without Circle, though.
I think if you're running Doomsayers, you're probably not running the Clerics, but if you're playing. So I think both are kind of anti-synergy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
I think generally when you're running Doomsayers, you probably don't have a turn one, you know, minion in your deck most of the time.
If we look at like all the cards that synergize with Cleric here, we have Power Word Shield.
Holy Nova.
Holy Nova. And yeah. Velen's Chosen. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cards out of 28, because you don't count the Cleric, that synergize with the Cleric, which is just too low, I think. I think you're going to want to find... you already have Loot Hoarders for your draw cycle as well, and such a high curve should be able to not fizzle out of cards. You know, you got Belchers and Tombs, Light Bombs, the Sky Golem, Sylvanas, Boom, Kel'Thuzad, Nazoth. Like, you have a really solid high end. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
And you always
have
Light Bomb. You can always fall back on Light Bomb if you want.
If you count Belcher as sort of like a high-end card-ish, then you have like a third of your deck as high-value minions, so you don't need actually that much draw to really cycle through it. So
that's a good point.
I don't think you need the clerics. You can instead cut the clerics and then put more five drops.
Death Lord. But with Death Barnes, Lord. I guess we don't want Barnes. We don't want them with Barnes, right? So
I
you put another Velen's Chosen with Curator is amazing.
Wild Pyromancer, just so you don't get like dead to some sort of crazy secret paladin start. Like, Muster for Battle is a thing in a while.
A one drop is nice, though. A one drop so you can coin into the Velen's is always a great play.
If he has a second copy of Velen's, I think that's right.
You got to factor in how often are you getting this one drop on one and then following up with Velen's Chosen, and then how often is it going to be a dead card in your hand that you don't have one of the five cards that synergize with it? And more often than not, it's going to be worse off for you in the hand. So if you can just look at it statistically and objectively, it's not the best card slot for the deck.
Cool. Yeah, I agree with that. Do you think he needs Museum, though?
I mean, if you put Curator, double Chosen, I don't mind
slow,
it.
Right?
I think it's okay. Sure, but it's all right.
I mean, they have to kill it in Wild because of the fear of Chosen just buffing up and trading things.
Exactly.
So with double Chosen, it's pretty solid.
Yeah.
And it gets you just cards to fill out your curve in whatever direction you need to take it. Since he doesn't have a lot of card draw in the deck, it's pseudo card draw because you have X percent chance to find the answer for the current situation you're in to fit your curve. So it helps smooth out things without having to run shitty card draw cards, because the card draw cards in Hearthstone suck. So it's kind of understated, but it can still fix your curve in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
Hey, and synergy with Nazoth.
VLPS, do you think a second Tomb would be good?
Yeah. I mean, I don't play much Wild, but I do know that it's probably pretty Secret Pally heavy right now. So a second Shadow or Death is probably just the most efficient way to take out a lot of the big targets. So with that in mind, if Secret Pally is still probably the most predominant deck in that format, I would definitely look into adding in probably a second Entomb and a second Shadow or Death as well.
And Entomb's just sick against Nazoth decks in general, because so many people are playing Nazoth decks in Wild because they're crazy. Everybody has two Belchers, two Balloted Shredders. You just Entomb one of those. You may not seem to be like the highest value of Entomb because they're paying 4 for their guy and you're paying 6 to remove it, but they're not getting it for free from Nazoth anymore.
And you are potentially.
So I think also you should probably cut down on some of these Death Rattles. You have so many of them.
Yeah.
And you want to have a controlled Nazoth. You want to fill the board up completely with good things, like VLPS.
Just only the good ones. Only the good ones. Okay, cool. Well, hopefully that helps you out, David. And for any of the other patrons out there, for our Valuetown patrons, go ahead and send those in to me. You can either message me on patreon.com or you can just write to Valuetown at chainmanv.tv. And we'll take a look at them each week. Okay, so our last segment before Q&A, just want to remind you guys, we're going to do some questions, Q&A at the end. So send your questions in. You can tweet them over to me at ChainManV, and we'll read them out later. But before that, we're going to do some Mechatorps Workshop. Yay.
I like that segment. It's pretty cool.
the originator, of course, thinks it's cool. But this is our segment where we come up with just brand new cards and that we think it would be cool. So I'm going to start things off with a Master of Shields is one of the cards I came up with here. And let me bring it up.
I believe in you, Chairman.
Oh, actually, I need to pull it.
Download the image.
Not download it, but I need to pull it from here. Okay, here we go. So it's a warrior card. Yay, it's a warrior card.
I actually remade the card for you. So it was
did you? Oh, okay. Maybe I have to.
It's fine. Don't worry about it. This is good enough.
No. Let me find it. So Noxious tends to edit some of mine because he's so much better at doing it than I am. So he finds better pictures.
Well, it's just like the wording just being
exactly
in line with what Hearthstone usually uses. But it's right, no big deal in terms of presenting the concepts.
Yeah, here we go. So it's a 2-drop. It's a 1 attack, 4 health, Master of Shields, common card. Adjacent minions have taunt. So we've had hero bosses, you know, and things like in the adventures that have had elements like this. And I thought it'd be just kind of cool just to, you know, it does have some elements of Sun Fury Protector, but it's got lasting effects, right? So if it survives, and that's why I kind of gave it 4 health too, because it's a little bit harder to get rid of. And it's something you can use later in games too. But, you know, maybe there's some synergy with Bolster, maybe, you know, that sort of thing. And just generally having, you know, potential for warriors just to put, you know, continued pressure, kind of like a dragon warrior, would be kind of interesting. You know, warriors tend to just drop one big minion at a time, or high valued minion one at a time, when they have that kind of deck. And, you know, this might promote a little bit more of a, I don't know, just a little bit more of a flooding possibility.
You mean preemptively enabling Eerie Statue?
maybe that could be something, but it's definitely a cheap card, you know.
Yeah.
How does the so the wording text doesn't state it's a battle cry? So
it's
what is silence?
It's not a battle cry. Anytime there's a guy next to him, he's got taunt. So
how does that work when like silences happen? I don't even remember. I think you'd have to silence this many to stop
the
taunt, right?
You silence silence taunt. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's an aura effect.
Yeah. Yep. So it's amazing.
Yeah, I would like to see, like, I will say this, you know, with this coming expansion, which we'll get news on in probably like, I think it's 2 weeks from now, right? Yeah. So mm-hmm. I would like to see like new concepts, because in Karazhan we didn't really see any new inspire or
mechanics,
joust.
Yeah.
Not necessarily new mechanics, exactly. So maybe an aura type of mechanic would be something that I mean I'm sure the cards are already, you know, set in stone by now at this point, but hopefully they have that in store for us.
yeah.
They were set in stone a year ago, back when Shaman sucked. Prepare for more things.
Prepare for more
Shaman. From above. No, please. By 2 for every
this is better be the priest's release. I'm gonna be freaking raging if it's not the freeze release.
A resurrected minion. It's like, what?
Yeah, so what do you think? Fireball, what do you think?
I mean, it's no purify, but...
it's no purify. Wow.
What he means is...
It's an interesting card. I think I can't see... Yeah, there might be some cool application of it where warrior can
bolster
or... be able to just
when is bolster ever going to be good? That's kind of why I was just like, let's just try.
When it's zero mana, it's going to be good.
It would be really cool with like Karen Bloodhoof, because you play it and then you play Karen and then they kill Karen and then Bane has taunt.
That's
so,
awesome.
Like, that sort of interaction is sweet. So death rattle, like you just jam it in Nazoth Warrior to give things double taunt that have death rattles, like the infinite taunt Harvest Golem and stuff like that.
Oh my really cool. God.
You mean Infested Tauren has double taunt?
yeah. That's true.
I actually like the idea of giving those minions taunt that just spawn another thing. Again, it's one of those things where, like, do you play this over Armorsmith ever? It's hard to say, but like, if this were a Warlock card, suddenly it's broken. But if it's a Warrior card...
that's why I made it a Warrior card.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just the class it belongs to needs different tools to enable it, but I love the concept. Either way, the idea of adjacent stuff having buffs is just a cool one.
Yeah.
In general,
again, it's kind of positioning. I mean, you're going to be playing it a lot of times late game and playing it with whatever, you know, possibly 2 cards or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But so it does have it will have the application like a Sun Fury Protector, but lasting effects, which is kind of cool if you don't remove it. Okay, let's see. I have one more here. Let me bring it up. It is.
It's a Warlock spell. Which one was it? It's the Reclamation of Souls.
Oh, actually, I didn't. Okay, that one I actually
have
to grab here. Okay.
You have to grab probably every single one of them, honestly.
No, I think I grabbed yours already. I grabbed yours. Yeah.
That sounded...
Okay, here we go. All right, here's a Reclamation of Souls. Okay, so Reclamation of Souls, it's a Warlock spell. It's 0 mana, so Firebat probably hates it already because it's 0. But text says, destroy all friendly minions, restore 3 health to your hero for each one. And so it's kind of got, you know, some elements of like Doom, but it doesn't remove your opponents. It's actually literally a sacrifice, you know, on your side of the board. But, you know, if need be, it sacrifices in terms of healing for you, right? And I felt like, I don't know, maybe an arena deck or some type of
Forbidden Ritual.
Forbidden
Ritual. 21
health for health restoration.
That's it. Actually, that's probably a little too crazy. I should have made it like maybe like one or two spells.
I don't even know if it's
Forbidden Ritual. Awesome. Okay, that was bad. But yeah, maybe make it not zero mana. Maybe a little bit more.
I mean, the most you can heal for is what, 21, which is essentially like a 10 mana Forbidden Healing.
Yeah. With two cards. I think it's fine.
From that standpoint.
Yeah.
And you're also at the same time sacrificing your entire board to make that happen.
Yeah. And I think it's okay.
Can't, like, tempo it out. Like, if you have anything on the board, I guess it's dead.
Well, it's one of those. Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, I don't know. Like, there's definitely some moments in games where
Sylvanas. Oh my god,
yeah, that's nasty. Sylvanas, it's OP as hell. Yeah. Just Sylvanas, and then Reclamation of Souls, heal for three. Yeah. Hey, it's a cool card to include in, you know, lock decks. I mean, they need some help, and I could definitely see this making its way as a one of, and you probably play one of Forbidden Ritual.
Yeah.
There's definitely, and then you have Reno and this, and you're like super good at healing.
Yeah, and again, like I feel like this card is one of those that I feel we're missing in Hearthstone. Just some playmaking cards, you know, like you can, you can set up some situations, or, you know, there's some situations where you've got like a bunch of weak minions on the board and your opponent's like gotten control, and you still have this outside chance of killing him with some kind of spell combo. And this, you know, gives you that extra chance and allows for those type of situations to play out in competitive events and that sort of thing. And that's kind of what I was thinking. Also, I still want Cho'Gall to be something eventually. So we got to like add some heal to Warlock to possibly make that card viable in some way one of these days.
Well, I mean, I have the combo for you. You go Cho'Gall into Karakazam, and then your Reclamation of Souls, all of them. So you pay 5 health, and you gain 12 after wiping your board for 7 mana. Yes. How does that sound?
Yes, dude, exactly.
Talk about a playmaker.
That's right.
Honestly, what I like about it, though, like, it's kind of the whole idea of sacrificing stuff in Warlock is a pretty strong theme, and it fits the whole, you know, Shadow Flame, Power of Whelming type stuff where, mostly Power of Whelming, where it's going to die anyway. Let me do something with it before it dies. And I think I like that concept a little bit. I don't know how much you could push it in terms of, you know, Warlocks playing.
But it gives it flexibility, too. It's like flexible
healing. You can probably find a good spot for it. And as long as eventually Blizzard works on adding those types of spots, or players discover it, right? Like, this is the type of card where people discover good decks where it fits, and suddenly, hey, Reclamation of Souls is a good one of in this specific list, and everybody plays one copy, and it's great.
Yeah.
I think it's a decent card. As long as it's epic, right? You made it rare, and I'm like, nope, not in my arena. not in my arena, maybe.
That's a good point, too. Okay, taking the arena players into account. That's such a responsible designer. Here we go. Bluefin Totemic. Yeah, right. This is like as troll as you get right here, baby. Man,
all right.
Okay. So this is a 2-mana, 2/3 Murloc, Bluefin Totemic, Battlecry, give a friendly totem. And a friendly Murloc +1.
So I went a little bit off the deep end.
That is really strong.
It should probably be a 3-drop, is my point. Like, I made the card, I was like, this should be a 3-drop or a 2/2. And I'm like, you know what? I don't even know. Like, this card is never going to see the light of day. But the concept is just, I want a card that works in Shaman that has more than just Murloc synergy. So focus more on the concept than the card itself.
Yeah, sure.
I think because a 3-mana maybe would be a lot more reasonable. The idea is that you can give +2/+2 total across totems and Murlocs so that you're not all in on the Murloc gimmick if you play Shaman. Because we've noticed a lot of that in the past, right? Where it's just, you always just go crazy in the Murloc direction and never really works out because you get blown out by losing even one minion. So now you can have a hybrid totem Murloc tribal deck.
Yeah, I think there needs to be some kind of cards to bridge that gap, because though really the only hybrid one so far is Paladin.
They're the only ones that have like a menagerie type build, and I would like if Shaman included some of that in their own deck building. Obviously, a 2-mana 2/3 with that ability is a bit over the top, but
the concept is still really good.
Yeah, they have a Murloc hero, for Christ's sakes, right? Like, shouldn't there be some type of Murloc Shaman? I mean, they even have that 10-mana Murloc card that nobody uses, or like. I don't think
a 4/5 seems a bit busted.
I don't think I've ever used
that. Yeah, like how the curators run in a lot of decks, but without fault, it's always, you know, beasts and dragons that you're drawing. No one really pays attention to
Sir Finley.
Murlocs.
That's about it.
Murlocs are kind of lacking a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Murlocs are weak.
Lyrics are weak. The problem is if they made Murloc strong, then people would be complaining
pretty pissed, because it would be this guy. You talk about Curvestone, people would get mad if Murlocs could curve.
All right, so another Shaman card here. 3 mana, spell, Neptilon's Call, epic card. Add 4 random Murlocs to your hand. They gain +1/+1, and then overload 3. So basically 6 mana for 4 Murlocs that get +1/+1.
So it's a sprint with Murlocs that get a little bit of a buff because they suck on average. And the idea is that since you're going to be overloaded, you can't play them on turn 4. So if you play this on curve, you're fucked and you lose the game. If you play this later, then you have a playmaker in and of itself. It's kind of a cool themed card. It wouldn't even be run necessarily just in Murloc decks. Probably not even. It's kind of like Neptilon back when it was played. It was just played because it gave you more stuff to do.
Just gave you cards.
So that was a cool, just a cool late game concept.
Yeah, what do you guys think?
Elemental Destruction Face Murlocs.
Pretty much, yeah. That's
pretty cool control card. I definitely like encouraging, Control Shaman back into the meta. Right now it feels pretty pretty much just like a tempo class. No other variation. I like this.
Do you not think Control Shaman has any potential right now? I feel like it's got really heals. Good. It's got some of the best removal in the game.
The issue with Control Shaman is Control Warrior comes along and shows you who the real control deck is.
It struggles versus other control decks. Yeah,
right, sure. So this would
Shaman is better against
certainly
the field,
help them out value like a warrior, I would say.
Yeah,
or at least start getting towards that point.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we've got one more here.
Another Shaman card. Another three
what is
cards
it? Like Shaman doesn't have enough stuff already. Seriously.
Just like whenever I make cards, I seem to just make them all for the same class for that week because I just think about a bunch of ideas. This one is one that has been probably mentioned a bunch of times. It's one of the more boring ones, but Spell Shield Totem, 2-mana 0/3 Totem. Forgot to put the tag at the bottom, but your opponent's spells deal 1 less damage. So Arcane Explosion would be worse. Maelstrom Portal. Blah blah blah. Right now, this would probably just be a tech card that nobody plays because it's not a 3-4.
You would play it in the mirror, man. Stop the lightning storms.
Arcane missiles. Arcane missiles.
I like that.
If you get ahead and just drop this, you just win.
Yes, Lotheb without being Lotheb. And that's what I wanted to do, really. I just wanted a Lotheb-like effect that doesn't just prevent you from playing anything. Like, that was the problem with Lotheb is the idea was, hey, you can't board clear. No, the idea was you're completely fucked because I'm suddenly winning next turn and there's nothing you can do about it, which I didn't like about the card. As much as I liked the effect, I think it was too... Like, its application was too broad because it denied AoE, it denied card draw, it denied the combo, it denied everything. And because it was big enough, it was also like a game closer. Whereas this is more of a tech card. Right, exactly. Just put it into perspective. It's pretty absurd. And this was more of a like niche tech card, more so than anything else. So
it should be an 0/4 so it doesn't die to spell power lightning bolt.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, because it's spell power lightning bolt. They're just gonna get
that would
spell
be
power.
Funny. Oh my
spirit
God.
Claws.
Spirit claws kill it right now, so they spirit claws than AoE, but if it was an 0/4,
that would be perfect, dude.
Gets wrecked.
Just the ability to emote after that. You know people would be screwing that up totally. Yeah, just screwing that play up. No, it totally should be a 0/4.
I think a 0/4 makes more sense because a 0/3 is it's kind of unplayable.
As a card itself, like it'd be cool if it was one of the card, like the basic totems. A little bit more
that'd
than
good,
having to
though.
Add the card. I mean, having to add the card to the deck is tough though. Or if it's one of these cards that come from a card, maybe it comes from a card, like it's a token or something.
Sure, you could have the Spell Shield Totemic and summon the Spell Shield Totem.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. Yeah, that'd be cool. All right, so those were some fun cards, guys. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Uh-oh, let me go back to the discussion. And let's finish things off with some Q&A here. Just take a few questions, and we'll wrap it up. Let's see. Okay, so here's a quick question from Pickles HS on Twitter. Has Blizzard been overusing random as a keyword? Portals, tomes, books, shredders, anything that pulls from a large pool? Oh, but it seems unhealthy.
Yeah, it starts becoming unhealthy when the pool is too large and it's too big to really play around. And that's when they've started kind of doing with all these portals is you have no idea what card's in their hand and you can't identify it and can't play around it or adapt to the situation appropriately because the range is just too wide. If it was a smaller window, then randomness is cool, creates different situations where players have to interact with. But when it becomes that you can't expect any sort of reasonable outcome from it, and the situations get too wild and wacky, then it can become quite frustrating, especially at a competitive level.
Yep, agreed. VLPS, thoughts on just randomness?
Yeah, I mean, randomness is always good for a card game, but I kind of agree with Firebat. I feel like ever since Discover came in effect, things like that have just been increasing in the game. You know, there's been more cards that generate random cards coming out, which is not always a bad thing, but yeah, I would definitely like to see it toned down a little bit, maybe concentrate more on just new mechanics, new concepts, rather than cards that create or discover random cards.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Okay, Jason Richards asks, he says, question, I get that there's only 30 cards, but why is there not a lot of what he calls head faking in decks to front one deck, but actually be another? I think you have a little bit of that, right? It's just I think it naturally happens when there's like a popular deck and then you just play the same class, but you play a different deck.
Decks that are hard to tell what the deck is.
Yeah, like you're faking out, okay. like decks that fake somebody out.
That happens with like every warrior archetype. when there's like the five warriors, it was like Warmax turn two, and you're like, well, I have no clue what the hell's going on. And then like turn three, they pass, and you're like, could still be anything. It could have been five different decks. So that's been narrowed down a little bit from there. But aggro and midrange shaman, you really don't know until like turn four or five. They could go Tunnel Trog, Totem Golem, Spirit Claws, Flame Faceless, and they could still be midrange. Mm-hmm. Or they could be aggro and you could be dead. Like,
it's a double lava burst coming out of nowhere that you don't expect. And you're like, oh, okay, I guess it wasn't the right deck. I played around midrange and hey, that happened.
I guess right now in the meta, like you sometimes don't even have to do that, like faking what kind of deck you're playing. Happens. Sometimes it's just good to play Tunnel Trog into Totem Golem or Wild Growth into Mirekeeper. That's just, even if they see it coming, there's no stopping it. I'm going to do what I want, so to speak. So, I like it. And it used to be a little bit more prevalent when, the Handlock days, I feel like it was 50-50 whether you queued up against a Zoo or a Warlock.
And those are
two completely different types of class or archetypes. So that was always cool. But right now it kind of just feels like tempo is king. And people are just, playing cards that are decks that are good and efficient and winning with them.
I'm happy that the head fakes are dying down. It was just a headache to try and predict what warrior you were playing against. And then occasionally you just died a OTK warrior in the mix there, thinking it was control warrior for the first 12 turns.
Yeah, the shield block slam and you don't have a clue what's going on. And then, hey, Worgen comes out, rip.
Yeah, so I'm really happy that that's kind of toning down a little bit. I think that's not fun having to try and guess without...
I think when you have a giant difference between the head faking archetypes, we're talking... aggro or tempo versus something that's combo control or whatnot at the end. It can definitely be bad, but if it's just a matter of like maybe a few cards, and that's kind of where it's cool, right? When people can add tech to, like a lineup or whatnot, and you'd be surprised by it. That's when it's okay. If it's just like contained, it's not like a giant switch. That's when it's more entertaining.
Most people net deck on lighter. So there's not a lot of head faking.
Yeah, I know. Sucks about it, but that's the reality.
All of my opponents are net decking every single time. So whatever was the last tournament, I look at all the decks from the last tournament, I go on Hearthstone, look at them all, and then I go play ladder, and then I'm like, all right, it's a warlock. All right, he's probably playing this deck card for card.
Yeah, and then he probably has Ooze and Harrison Jones. And,
that's how I try and guess my opponent's deck cards, and it usually works.
Yeah, and it gives you a nice advantage, too, when you nail it.
Yeah.
Let's see. L Goats, what do you think of Heroic Brawl having multiple tiers of entry costs for different players and then reward scaling accordingly?
I like the idea of reward scaling so you can bet in as much as you want and you get out of it like the same percentage.
That'd be cool.
Put like 100
casual
gold,
players, sit down. Just let me get my 12 wins. I want my golden legendaries and my epic prestige of it. That's what I want. I want it to be prestigious. So keep it the way it is. 1,000. Let's do it.
1,000 gold entry, I see. But it's only 10 bucks, dude. You don't get it. Like, you don't understand how many people will be paying $10. Like, you underestimate the amount of noobs you're going to be farming for the first 6 months.
I want it to be prestigious to get 12 wins. I want it to be hard. I want them to have to waste all of their money. I don't want some guy grinding at like $100, or I mean 100 gold a buy-in, and just grinding it all day, and then he gets 12 wins. Then my 12 wins means nothing.
No, it just means you got skamas because you chose to put it 1K in.
Yeah,
the odds are just bad for you, man. Okay, I mean, I can see looking at it from that standpoint.
Sure, I like what you mean. But like,
I think the multiple tiers generally, I do. I think I probably do. Like in the end, I'm glad they're starting at the high end, I guess, first, a little bit higher, like on the higher end, instead of just like making it completely accessible. But I think eventually it would be nice to have multiple tiers. You'd have to see how the player distribution is too, if you have multiple tiers, because it's going to be divided, obviously, right? So you're going to have enough people to actually matchmake in an interesting way or not. Okay, maybe one or two more here. Let's see. Let's see. Okay, here we go. Spooky, with Thorazan rotating out with Freeze Mage in combo decks. With it rotating out, will Freeze Mage in combo decks be still viable, disregarding what cards are coming in the expansion? So if you were to take Emperor Thorazan out right now, would any of the combo decks or Freeze Mage be viable?
Yeah.
Sure.
In the current meta,
I think so.
Right now, maybe, but depends on the metagame pocket you're talking about, I guess, because it fluctuates quite a bit. But yeah, I mean, the burst they do is still 30 or like close to it, so you could still die without the Emperor.
Freeze Mage can do 30 without Emperor, right? Roaring Torches. More. It's like double Roaring Torch, Frostbolt, double Ice Lance or something that's up there.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't know. Something you still along
got,
those lines.
You still got Sorcerer Apprentices to help you
It's
out.
Like 32, I think. Yeah, I think it's like
that's
32.
Only
6,
12, 15, 19. That's only 23, so that's not enough.
Okay.
With the Roaring Torches?
I guess maybe not, with the Roaring Torches.
No. If you go double Roaring Torches, that's 14 right there, right? And then you get...
You're talking with the Thalnos.
Yeah, Thalnos, Ice Lance, and everything else, and you get 32 damage from what I'm running off of.
But if you go with the Thalnos, you can't go Frostbolt, Lance, Forge Killer.
You would go Apprentice, Thalnos, and then...
Apprentice, Thalnos. What the hell is these guys?
I know.
This is too many cards.
Every spell is zero mana. Okay.
Okay, sure. Well, I mean, we're talking about if you want to go like max damage.
And then two Sorcerer's Apprentice at Fatigue, play Arcane Intellect after playing two Forgotten Torches to get the Roaring Torches to double up the spell power.
Yep.
I guess it depends on like how
the meta
is. Like Emperor, so like the whole picture is going to change. Once upon a time, Nazoth Paladin was really, really popular not too long ago, and having that OTK was really important in that matchup. So, if the meta shifts and Nazoth Paladins become more popular, and these mages lose their OTK potential, then it could get a little bit more difficult for them. But
22 of them with Warlock, you get the old Wolf Rider PO Faceless.
Oh man!
Actually, wait. Let me think. One apprentice is enough, right? You don't need two of them. The more
just one.
You need one apprentice with Thalnos. You don't need two, so it's actually a lot easier.
Yeah,
to get the full 32 damage.
So it's only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Okay, yeah,
still nine cards. Full hand. Both of those torches have been cycled and gotten back.
Either way, you can get really close to 30 even without all this shenanigans, so it's still going to be okay at some point.
Yeah.
Point is,
I think you would have higher odds of just dropping Malagos and hoping they don't have a quality rather than.
That's probably true. That's probably
cycle
true.
For that combo.
That's actually true. Okay, last question, and this is kind of one of these us looking into our, just our fortune-telling ball here. So going into the next expansion, this question is from Alexander Hines. It's not from Alexander Hines. It's from, I'm not sure who it's from. Anyway, what do you think will be the most OP class come next expansion? And also, here's a follow-up. Is it healthy to always have an OP class, like the most... or the best class at the moment. So guesses first. So this is kind of like a fun guess. What class do you think will be OP after, the next expansion that they'll probably announce at BlizzCon, or they are announcing at BlizzCon?
Priest.
That's what I think. That's actually what I think.
I'm going to go with Druid. That does sell because there's no rotate. Are we talking pre-rotation or post? Because like either way, I think Druid just shits on everyone.
We still have like a couple months, right?
Okay. So then I'm going to say Druid.
Okay.
Druid is pretty good.
I'm going to go with Druid. Like you almost can't fuck up that guess.
Well, I mean, you could say
Druid's been top one or two in every meta in Hearthstone ever.
Since the beginning, yeah. It hasn't changed. I don't think it'll be like... That's the problem is Druid's always just behind the top class, so I don't know if it'll ever be like oppressive come around next expansion since they've been really careful not to reintroduce another Force of Nature Savage Roar. So maybe it'll just be second, but
Second is good. VLPS, yeah. What do you think, man?
I mean, yeah, if history tells us anything, they're definitely going to show Priest a lot of love, but I'm going to switch things up and say Paladin, just because I think they have the best late game legendaries in Tyrion and Ragnar's Lightlord. I think Ivory Knight is going to be really strong, even in a mid-range deck, so I'm hopeful that they get some type of early mid-game to kind of bring mid-range Paladin back into the game, and with all that late-game efficient healing, I think that, I think they'll be pretty strong.
Okay, so we got some different ones.
I just realized, what if there was a card for Paladin that read something as boring as like 2-mana 2/3, add a whelp to your hand to enable the Nightbane Templar? Would that ever be a thing? Like,
yeah, if they want to push the dragon theme a bit, I could definitely see like that.
Adding a single whelp, it's kind of a boring dragon, but it's something it's you just keep in your hand all game.
Right? If that's the only dragon you put into it, it's kind of low percentage, right? If you only have one card that gives you a dragon.
No, it's not the one card you put in. You do play dragons in a dragon deck.
The idea is that
I don't know if Dragon Paladin would be like that good, even in that spot.
I've tried Dragon Paladin to make it work. It's missing something, that's for sure. It's just
two drops. It needs two drops.
Yeah, absolutely. Mini
pot.
Like this one card that creates 3/1s and attaches a Light's Justice to your hero.
What's that one? I've never seen that. Would be broken.
Good.
They would never print that.
They're
would they?
Running
that would
those
be way
wild.
Too broken.
That's the like they had stats or whatever, and it was the highest win rate card when played on Curve in all of Hearthstone.
Really? What was the win percentage? Yeah. Do you remember?
It was below Spirit Claws.
It was below Spirit Claws. I don't know. That's not what I heard. I heard it was the highest all time.
I don't remember the exact
number, but it was in like the 60s.
Yeah, I remember the Secret Pally Mirror was always, you know, if they have it and you don't, just escape, concede quickly.
So
it's
interesting. It's interesting. Yeah. Nobody thinks that Shaman will stay on top. As flexible as Shaman is, or at least as much tool as Shaman still has right now. I guess we're guessing that they'll get nothing like next expansion.
Being optimistic, saying Priest. I think the most rational thing would be probably Druid, because we're not rotating out things yet. But I'm optimistic about Priest. I don't think Shaman's even like that much so on number one right now. It's pretty close, honestly, to just being taken over, because Shaman is just being oppressively targeted right now. Yeah. Like, there are Baron Geddens, Harrison Jones, and Oozes in every deck.
Right.
Druid is running, like, Geddon, so you know something.
Yeah, Druid runs Geddon now.
What spells are Druids losing? Are they losing any of those early game spells? Is Living Roots...
I mean, Raven Idol goes away with League of Explorers, so Druid is dead, and you won't...
Living Roots is going away, too.
I was going to say, because Arcane Giants are, in my opinion, one of the most impressive cards right now, so...
Yeah,
I'm hopeful
Druid
that
is
comes
insane
a little bit...
at getting
rotation
back,
hits.
You know?
When rotation hits, honestly, like when Raven Idol goes away, I'm willing to bet the Druid just fades off. Like, unless they get a replacement for their existing deck, that deck is just gone.
Raven Idol's not even that good.
Idol is the card
Raven
that's so bad
that
on its own.
Really?
Okay. No, Idol is bad. Idol is bad on its own. But Idol, with the package they've got, is carrying the class, is how I look at it.
With Fandral's pretty good.
Makes Fandral good, and it makes...
I mean, it's
interesting
Arcane Giants, Fandral,
they're gonna make Giants worse.
But I definitely think Druid will be fine without.
I don't know. Not in this current iteration, though.
I don't know, man. Innervate and Wild Growth are still, they're still good cards, man. They're gonna be good.
You just play
Innervate, Fandral.
Two Feral Rage
still sucks, dude. It still sucks to
play. You just
play
two Feral Rage and two Mulch, and then cut the Raven Idols, and you're fine.
Dude, do you know how good, like, I mean, the odds of you getting Wild Growth are, what, 8% to get, like, ramp off Idol?
It's,
like, 8%.
11%?
Either way, it's, like, it increases your odds of getting Wild Growth substantially, so it's, like, another compensation for the bad stars. But anyway, I digress. It's just one of those things where I think Druid might struggle post-rotation for a bit until people bring out another good deck. But pre-rotation, I still think they'll be at the top of the food chain or close to it.
I just can't wait till the broken priest cards come out.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to break things like
broken
when
cards.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely hopeful that they. I mean, well, you know, deservedly so though. I think because I think priest is kind of, we all agree, is not in a good spot. But
I don't even think it takes that many cards to actually break priest. Surprisingly, it's just if you want to.
They only lost like Light Bomb, Bell and Chosen, that brought them from like tier one to like. Five.
They were never tier one.
They were
one.
Never tier one.
Not tier one.
Never
but.
Tier one. Maybe two.
Tier
or three.
Four?
Tier three. Maybe three. Three. Let's give it three.
They were always tier one against Secret Pally, which was very dominating. So
which was,
I guess from that standpoint.
Remember when they used to remember when they used to wreck Shaman?
Rag, like if they played Regros the Fire Lord and their Secret Paladin, I was actually just like 55% against Priest with Fire Lord and in Secret Paladin. When you just ran the whole
Tyrion, yeah, there's like an extra, there's an extra threat. Yeah, there's an extra threat.
Because they don't have any way to kill you or starting to kill you or anything like that. So they're just removing. And when you just go Mysterious Challenger into Boom, into Rag, into Tyrion, they're just dead.
It was never a great, I mean, it was a good winning, better than 50% winning percentage, but it was never crazy high, was it, the LPS? Like that matchup? Because I used to play
a lot
of
high, man. No, it was pretty
high in my opinion. And also, there was a point, especially towards the end, right before Standard rotated out, a lot of people were going with the OTK Priest.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they were running the Acolytes with the Valen's Chosen and Death Lords. It was just really good against Druid. It was a lot better against Druid than Standard Control Priest. It was a lot better versus Secret Valley. So, obviously, it lost to Warriors. You know, Warrior was the bane of that deck.
Yeah. I got top 10 Legend with that deck twice. The freeze.
Yeah,
freeze.
Wasn't I in China with you? And I think you did it from the hotel.
Yeah, I did it from the hotel in China.
Wait, the freeze priest? Which one was that?
It's
the burn priest.
The burn priest.
Yeah. I just called it freeze priest.
Freeze priest.
Confusing and annoying, I guess. I don't know. But I got top 10 legend from the hotel in China, and I brought it to NA versus CN for one of the ladder challenge things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the big things though is like how competitive is the class in tournament, and in ladder is a very different story, right?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Obviously,
Priest is supposed to be more competitive in tournaments, and in the past, it's been a great tech deck that has been pretty successful in tournaments when brought. Yeah. But lately, it goes out first round every time.
It's always hard to see though. It's always hard to see where things are going to end up, just because. You know, for an expansion, it's a little bit easier when there's like, you know, 30 to 40 cards, but we have an adventure rather. Now an expansion where it's going to be like 120 plus cards. Even after we see all the cards, people make wrong predictions where the meta's going to end
up.
What?
People
so.
Make wrong predictions? No.
Yeah.
Doctrine's not that good.
We'll see, man. Things could get, things could flip over, you know. Paladin and Priest and Hunter taking over the game again. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe.
This might happen. Hunter does look in a good, like, to be in a
it's
good
not
Hunter's
that far
in
off.
Really
either.
Good spot.
Yeah, it's not far off.
Hunter's like the fourth best class right now.
Mm-hmm. And it's not by much either. It's like it's on the cusp of just being pushed into like tier one for sure.
Yeah, that's after.
I think
Cloaked
Huntress is going to be really good for the next year and a half. So we'll see if they get a couple more good secrets like Catrick.
Please no.
I could definitely see them.
We're going to see some lock and load. We're going to see some lock and load cycles, man.
I can't do it.
Are we ever going to see those?
Ben Brode in an interview once said he doesn't like lock and load. It feels too combo OTK-ish.
What?
What?
What? That's the most awesome card they've printed.
Wait, where's the OTK? Like, explain to me the OTK in that one.
Sometimes it kills you, I guess.
I think Yogg is worse than every
aspect.
How
does it kill you?
That is so wrong. Whoever made that, like, honestly, I can't imagine that would come from Ben Brode. I think he heard somebody at the company say that, and he's like, yeah, I should probably be on that guy's side, because that card is actually one of the most awesome flavor cards they've made. It has all the randomness I hate of portals, but it's actually not broken enough right now that I'm like,
it's the only way. It's the only way they can get you to play half the Hunter cards is to put them in your hand, and you gotta play them. So.
There's no way that he's. Oh man, there's no way he said. There's no way.
I guess if you got every single kill command off of kill command.
Is it really that
maybe?
Good? I
don't even see it. I don't know. Maybe that's it. Maybe you can just like cycle kill commands and get some kind of crazy combo.
Maybe like casual players hate it because they don't understand what's going on. Maybe that's like a portion of it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Feels like you're getting killed by stuff your opponent just lucks out on. So it's like,
yeah.
I hate RNG.
All right, well, why don't we wrap up? Definitely a great show, and thanks to everybody tuning in, watching, and VLPS, Firebat, thanks, guys, for coming on. Why don't we just start off some shout-outs with you, VLPS? Where can people find you?
Shout-outs to Tempestorm for bringing me on board, and shout-outs to the community for such a good welcoming. So excited for the future, not only myself and the team, but I think Hearthstone. I think right now we're kind of, everyone's kind of in a negative state of mind, or not happy, but the game comes around,
I think we're coming.
We've all gone through oppressive metas, and it works out in the end, so I'm hopeful that come January we'll all be smiles and roses and sunshine. I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, last year they had that great League of Explorers, release at BlizzCon. So I'm expecting some big stuff from this expansion. This is a full expansion, like you were saying. It's going to be a lot of cards. So I'm expecting a lot of good things there. Firebat, how about you? Shoutouts. Where can people find you?
All right. Shoutouts. Cloud9. Community. All that good stuff. And you can find me at Firebat on Twitch, Twitter, Tinder, I don't know, wherever.
Tinder. Wow.
If you want some of that Firebat love, you just gotta hit him up on Tinder. Oh damn, son, you nailed that. Man. That nice. Shout out to Tinder for getting me laid. Firebat,
come on.
All right, Noxious, how about you, buddy?
Just shout out to you guys for just coming up on the show. We got like last minute Firebat coming in after a VLPS was announced as a guest for the week, so that was pretty cool. We got a pretty good discussion regarding the Heroic Brawl that came up. And a big shout out to all of you people who are watching this as well, the patrons. Guys, we are running the show, and it's funded primarily by the patrons who are getting behind the project. So if you guys want to support the project directly, it helps us make the show not only a reality but also gives us a good reason to keep going forward and making better content in the future. So beyond just the support, it is something that we need. So if you guys are willing to chip in and help with the show support, very appreciated. So on this front as well, a big shout out to Complexity. Also want to say positive words about the team right now. Going through some tough times, the win rates of the players are kind of like Super JJ is one of the best players, but he's going through tough times. Crane as well. But keep your chin up, guys. We'll do it.
The new year's coming, man. The new year's definitely coming soon.
We'll do this.
Yeah, and to round things out, again, thanks for the three of you guys for doing the show. It was a lot of fun today. And the VODs, again, for those of you who missed the beginning, will be on youtube.com/ChamionV. And I guess I do want to plug something that I'm going to be doing tomorrow. It's something I've been working on for months and months. And it's an Overwatch thing. So, you guys, if you're not into Overwatch, you can ignore what I'm about to say. But it's going to be coming to Hearthstone soon. So at least listen out on what it is. So I'm bringing or debuting my brand new game show, Streamer Showdown, in the Overwatch community tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be ZP. I'm actually not hosting. It's going to be ZP, Stir, Poke, and Harblue. It's a full-out game show. It's, what you would imagine, kind of like Jeopardy and some of the things that you've seen maybe with the mods, but our kind of take on it, which is going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be interaction with the chat too, so definitely check that out. There'll be giveaways. We're giving away five gift cards so you guys can buy loot boxes too with Mascherino. They're going to be helping us out with that. That's going to be at 3 p.m. on this stream as well, so maybe take a check that out if you can. And so that's going to be it. The audios will be available tomorrow as normal. And I guess we'll be back next week. And we're going to try to do an episode from BlizzCon too, and hopefully maybe even have a meetup at BlizzCon. So I do plan on having some kind of meetup. Hopefully you guys can come in and hang out with us, meet us somewhere. Maybe meet us at one of the bars or the bowling alley or something, and we can all hang out. But until then, for VLPS, Firebat, Noxious, and myself, ChamionV, we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Later.